Hello everybody and welcome back to Mind Clickers. I'm a sport and exercise scientist and performance coach for the Renegades from Melbourne, Australia, with a passion for esports performance, counselling, science, and how we can holistically improve our athletes' quality of life. I am also a scientific author for G-Science, helping to provide and share educational content catered towards esports health and performance. I created Mind Clickers to provide an insight into the psychological and performance demands of elite level gaming. This includes getting an insight from professional players, coaches, shoutcasters, organization owners, and esports researchers about their respective domains. In the following episode, I had the absolute pleasure of chatting with Jack, apparently Jack Benton, who is a professional Rocket League player for Dignitas and currently the world's best 1v1 player. Jack and I could not stop talking about so many topics, from his background and early career days as a ranked king, sports science and esports performance variables, marketing yourself as a professional player, and most importantly, an in-depth psychological insight into how Jack thinks in Rocket League. This includes his mindset towards ranked, pre-warm-ups, building team synergy and comms, dealing with toxicity, and managing ego. This is one of my best episodes yet, and I can't wait for you to listen, so sit back, relax, and enjoy. Hello everybody and welcome back to season 2 episode 19 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2021. I'm joined today by a very special guest who is Jack, apparently Jack Benton, who is a professional English Rocket League player for Dignitas. Good morning to you, mate.
You all right?
how's it going on this nice fine English morning for you, man?
Yeah, quite early, but you know, we work with it. It's going good, mate.
That's the way. Is it quite cold over there this time of year, or what's the weather like?
Nah, I mean, it's been really warm, like recently, like literally like 26 degrees where I'm about. But it's England, so you know, very like bipolar weather. I mean, it'll probably rain in like 2 minutes and then just be sunny as anything.
Sounds like Melbourne to me, man. I guess what we'll do is usually we do on Mind Clickers is just introduce yourself a little bit, so a bit of background about yourself, how you got into gaming, how you got into esports, and when you went from casual to competitive.
Yeah, so I mean, I played games for, I mean, quite a while. I remember used to playing Pokemon, when I was like 4 or like 5, like out on the street with my brother and his mates, and that was probably like my first memory of playing games. And then playing Minecraft from like the age of like 7 on PC, and like doing PvP. That was my thing, like actual PvP when I was like 7, just beating up teenagers in Minecraft PvP was a day.
Hell yeah.
And I got like a Xbox and played FIFA, games like that. Mm-hmm. And then I saw how I got into Rocket League. I actually saw the Sidemen. I don't know if you're familiar with them. But on YouTube, I saw the Sidemen play it and I was literally just hooked. I don't know how, but like as soon as I saw the first game, I was like, yeah, I won that game. Yeah. But the issue is it wasn't out on Xbox for like a year before. Like it was out on Xbox a year later than it came out on PS4 and PC. So literally, I'm not even exaggerating. Every day I'd check the Xbox store to see if it was up, and I got it like a year later than everyone else on the first day it came out on Xbox.
Right.
That was pretty sick. And then I kind of just, you know, played the game casually. But I've always been, you know, I've always been very competitive. I don't want to just be okay at something. Everything I do, I want to be the best at. Mm-hmm. So I'd always like try and improve in these games. And Rocket League was the same. And I guess it kind of snowballs from there. I mean, I never really had time to play competitive. So I was just playing ranked for like 4 years straight. On PS4 until I got a PC in February 2020. I only got a PC because I played like one tournament. Like the first ever tournament basically I played was like a qualifier for a LAN with my teammate at the moment, Joeyus, and a friend of ours, Aenia, who we were like ranked B on PS4. Joeyus was like rank A on PC, just moved like 4 months ago. Yeah. And then my dad really enjoyed the LAN, and he was like, why don't you just give it a shot? We got a PC February 2020 and, you know, started playing from then. Here we are.
Wow. So yeah, that's a definitely interesting backstory. I love that. And do you think some of that competitiveness came from playing FIFA? Because from my experience, FIFA is quite a competitive game. So do you think that, you know,
it came from sport because I've played tennis for like at a decent level for like since I was six, just turned seven until I started rugby, basically. So until I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
So probably like 10 years pretty much. And obviously training like five times a week for that and playing tournaments or whatever, like you naturally have to be competitive, don't you? So so that it's probably came from that mostly, but FIFA's a definitely an interesting game for raging and competitiveness.
For sure, from what I've heard at least. I've played a little bit of FIFA, but not too much of it. But
I don't recommend it. Don't recommend it.
Get hooked straight away. Yeah. I a lot of my friends play it and they're pretty obsessed with opening packs and stuff, and that just sounds like, oh heck.
It's like gambling.
Typical EA. So you made the switch from PS4 to PC. How was that switch? And, you know, obviously the biggest impact is, you know, increased FPS, right? So mm-hmm. how was that switch? And, you know, is there a real reason to play Rocket League on console?
I mean, it was mad. I mean, like, I remember the first day of getting PC, or the first few days, I was like, I've gotten worse. I've like, what have I done? Because it was like, it was so smooth that you just wouldn't be able to control your car at all. And after playing on PS4, for 4 years, I mean, I was like rank one and everything on PS4, even though I just didn't play tournaments at all. I was just like a ranked warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, I was just like, I played a little bit of six mans here and there on PS4. And now I played like a lot of six mans on PC.
Yeah.
And, after a few days, I just started noticing like mad improvements. But I just wouldn't touch 1v1 was my issue. And then after 2 weeks of playing PC, I was like, okay, this is okay, but it's not as big of an improvement as I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I played 1v1 and got number one in the world in like 3 days.
Wow.
And on PS4, my highest was rank 4 in the world. Mm-hmm. And obviously rank 1 on PS4 like by a mile, but like I was never able to get like anywhere close to rank 1. But then PC was just like shot that up straight away. And yeah, the difference is mad. I mean, it's 144 hertz is the main mm-hmm. jump. It's crazy, but yeah, it was sick.
Yeah, hell yeah. And I guess later on we'll jump into, because, you know, some of our listeners on MindClickers probably aren't too well versed within, you know, the Rocket League category and the Rocket League genre, and I guess what it looks like at that competitive level. So I guess later on we'll try and, you know, go in a little bit depth in regards to, you know, ones and six mans and you know, the biggest comparisons between those two. But so currently what I've been thinking about is, so how old are you at the moment?
17.
17, right. So in regards to that, so what did it look like, I guess, having that conversation, you know, because are you currently at school or are you
primarily
pursuing?
Nah. So like, I don't know if you're familiar with the like English education system, but it's like 11 to 16 is like high school, and then 16 to 18 is like the next step. We call it college.
Right.
But like for America, college is our university, which is like 18 to 22 years old, around that age.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm 17. I'm going into my second year of college in like 3 months. I literally just finished 2 days ago. So,
well, right.
Yeah, we're starting the second year soon.
And how's that balance? How are you finding balancing that between, you know, full time studying and then trying to be a professional player?
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite good with time management.
Okay.
So like I always had to manage, you know, tennis and school. So I've not found it too tricky. Like sometimes there's some rough periods. I mean, like, the last season of RCSX was mad, like just ridiculous amount of tournaments. And then on top of that, my college just loves to slap 10K word assessments, like three in 1 week. And it's like, RCSX, I've got 28 tournaments in 5 days, three 10K word assessments. Like, where do I start with this, you know?
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. So you've been able to, I guess, find a balance between juggling those two and, you know, really, you know, try and organize yourself in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't have to like study too much because I pick things up like very quickly. Like, I'm very quite like naturally just good at that, so it's not too much of an issue. Like I've never, you know, not been having good grades, so it's not too much of an issue in that regard. But it can get tough sometimes. I mean, I see it for other people. If you don't manage your time well, you can get caught up. But yeah, it's not really like that for me. So I'm lucky.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess it's quite difficult because, you know, I had a chat with a couple other players within the scene, and it's difficult when, I guess, you're pretty much stuck within a certain path and you don't have the ability to be able to choose where you want to go in regards to tertiary education. So I definitely think it's, you know, I'm glad to see that you've found a pathway that's really been balanced and it's worked for you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good. I enjoy what I'm saying. I'm actually doing sports science, so like something similar to what you talk about, like psychology and that. But yeah, I do like it. It's interesting.
Yeah, for sure. What was the reason behind going down that route?
I mean, I've always loved sports, so and I just like the side of sport that isn't, you know, the side that first comes to mind. You always think of like, oh, just the playing, but there's more to that. And I also think like psychology and just general stuff like that helps for everyday life. So it's definitely an interesting topic that just kind of caught my eye. And yeah,
for sure, definitely. I guess we'll have a chat about that later as well. What I was leading to ask is, I guess, you know, after being an absolute ranked warrior for X amount of years, then obviously being picked up by Dignitas, how did that come around and how did you feel about that?
I mean, yes, so I had a team before that. Do you want me to talk about like my
Yeah, teams? Yeah, let's go into it, for sure.
So, like I said, I've only played Rocket League like competitively since like February of 2020. And like I see loads of other players like they have to try for years. I kind of had it easy for some reason. Like I just my first team, I teamed with Polar and Dead Monster on Stormtroopers, and I was ranked B plus at the time. Me and Polar were both ranked B plus. Dead Monster was rank A. And then we started just doing really well in tournaments for no reason. And we just clicked really well together. Like these bubble tournaments we were winning or doing well in. Like Spring Series, which was like RCS teams, and other tournaments like Euro Cup, which was RCS teams. We were like placing really well in those tournaments, like top 12. Like placing ahead of some RS or RCS teams. And at this point, RCSX wasn't announced. And it was we were just planning on having to play RS quals. And we were like one of the top kind of teams that were expected to make it, which was absurd. Like I wouldn't even guess that after like literally 2 months of starting to play competitively that like we'd be in that position. But we did quite well in our first split of RCSX. We got top 12 in the first regional, which was insane. And then somehow we didn't even make the second regional. And then the third regional, I think we placed like top 20. And, you know, we were disappointed because we didn't make the major, but like overall we placed top 20 in EU for a team where it was three bubble players and one of them hadn't even played competitively. You know, it was a good run. And then I guess Dig kind of, you know, Panzer saw that. I've been friends with Yaris for 3 years now. Like proper friends with him. I've played them a load, so he probably helped me out get on Dig. And Panda saw it, and they looked through replays. They saw that I was a player who had potential, and yeah, they decided to ask me to try out, and it went pretty well. There we are.
Hell yeah! And I guess, you know, when you went into your first regional, how did that feel? That competitive feel, I guess, you know, from coming from somewhere like being a ranked king into going to your first regional.
I mean, it was nerve wracking, but like it was sick. Like, I don't know, it just getting to play. I just remember, like, obviously, I really enjoy playing right now because, you know, it's a different type of enjoyment, though, because now I'm nearer to the top and beating teams like rank two in EU, rank, well, hopefully being rank one soon, but like rank three, rank four, whatever. It's like, it's a good feeling, but it's like, oh, okay, yeah, we won that match. It's not expected, but it's like, it's not huge. Whereas when I was in that team with Stormtroopers, that was like so fun, just because getting to play these RCS teams, you go in with no expectations, like we should lose this, right? We never even made RS or whatever, and then somehow beating them, absurd feeling, and just seeing like the Twitter just blow up. It was you know, and the first regional, like, just because you have no expectations, don't you? You just go in there, you play your game. And you're confident against the teams, because I remember having to play teams like Cash, Natchtown, Clayx, and you're confident against those because you've done well in these bubble tournaments and they're just a bubble team, so you're playing well against them, and then you play RCS teams, you look forward to that. You know, it was really fun. It was a good experience.
Yeah, for sure. Hell yeah. And I guess because of COVID, have you had much experience at LAN before?
All right, so I actually wouldn't be playing if it wasn't without COVID, because I would have still carried on with tennis probably.
Right.
But it was a mixture of lockdown, which made me stop playing tennis, and I was I was picking up a lot of injuries, which was making it become not as fun, and I wasn't being able to play at my best, so I was getting frustrated at that. And I wanted to channel that competitiveness into something else like this, which I enjoy. And lockdown helped with that because obviously we were inside all day.
We couldn't
go out and play tennis. Like, that was just killed. So I had time to grind the game. And but yeah, I mean, so like previous LAN experience, like I said, I didn't play tournaments. The only tournament I ever played really was a qualifier for a LAN. It was called Rising Stars, Rocket Baguette Rising Stars. And they did a sick job with that tournament. It was like a Netherlands qualifier because the two teammates I was playing with, like I said earlier, was Joris and a player called Aenia. And they're both Dutch. So we were playing teams like Echo Zulu in like the final. And at this time Echo Zulu were in RLS and we somehow managed to beat them. It was mental. And then we didn't even know that was a qualifier for a LAN, and then we just got a message. I was actually on the way back from a tennis tournament. I got a message in the car. I was like, oh, do you want to come to France to play against these three other teams the winners of these other qualifiers? I was like, yes. And then my parents allowed me. My dad went with me, Joris and Aenia. And that was my first and only LAN. We placed third out of four teams. And the teams were Nordvind, which had players like Sebadam, Al Dente and Data, so they're like old time good players. And then teams like what was that name? Exalti, which had Kerrion on it, who was RS. And I think he was going into RCS at the time. So this was quite a big deal. And then RJM, oh no, Team Vertex they were called, which was Coker, Rizex and Dumain, and they placed quite well in RLS. So they were good teams. We placed third out of them, but it was a sick experience. But yeah, that's my only LAN. I kind of hope that COVID clears up and we can go to more.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, you know, taking that background in tennis from when you used to play, you know, and obviously used to probably do tournaments in that, you know, going into your first LAN, could you sort of relate that kind of pre-game stress and pre-game mindset to playing at LAN?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's... Yeah, like it's obviously in person. It's a different experience because obviously the environment's different. You've got a crowd there to watch you specifically, and it's like it was like 1,000 people just in front of us, and it was quite mad. but it did help. I mean, I was still nervous, but like you can relate to it. Yeah, it's a similar kind of pressure, but it is also different because it's like you're not used to playing Rocket League, you're used to playing tennis with Rocket League, like playing a game in front of, you know, 1,000 live people watching and a few thousand on Twitch. It's a bit of a weird one, but you get used to it.
I actually played better
on LAN. Yeah, true.
Yeah. So did you guys have a coach that went with you, or was it just you three?
Nah, we were literally just, we played this tournament for fun. Just for fun. Why not? I was in Spain at the time, and I remember it. I got out of the shower. I was like, I saw this on Twitter. I was like, oh, do you want to just play this? And they're like, oh, I don't know. Oh yeah, do it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So it was just for fun, and we just somehow made a LAN out of it. And if I didn't play that tournament, I wouldn't be playing competitively in rugby today. It's kind of crazy how things like that work.
The butterfly effect, right?
Yeah, because my dad enjoyed it so much that he wanted me to get a PC. He was like, yeah, why don't you just give it a try? I was like, yeah. All right.
Yeah. I think that's the best when you have supportive parents, right, that can invest because, you know, you see it in traditional sports a lot where I guess, you know, there's so many parents that come down to the local football field or, you know, local rugby field, and then when it turns to gaming, it's like completely different mindset, right? That mindset's switched, and it's like a completely different atmosphere that's happening. And, you know, I think it's awesome to see that, you know, your parents are really on board with that and really providing you with that support.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't ask for better parents in that regard, really. They're really like all for it. So I'm very lucky.
Awesome. I guess some other things I wanted to kind of tick off is obviously in terms of, you know, player performance and in regards to, you know, we have our pillars of performance, which, you know, pretty much entails, you know, your nutrition, hydration, exercise, sleep, stretches. And I guess just kicking off with stretches. So, you know, do you have any kind of pre-game warm-up or anything you do to really get ready?
I don't really have that much of a routine in like regards to like physical activity.
Right.
I probably it's a weird that we're talking about this because I want to look into it more. I want to look into the perfect sleep, the perfect proper schedule. Like, I have a rough schedule, but I need to make it more outlined. If I'm, because I struggle with cold hands a lot, and one thing I need to look into it more, but I think like one thing you can do is like physical activity to kind of boost that up and make you warmer. So a few like press ups here and there would is probably the only thing I can do before playing. If I have cold hands, but you know, I kind of just hop on Rocket League and warm up.
That's your warm up.
Yeah, I do need to. I want to look into stuff like that more. But yeah, no really stretches. Not really. No.
Yeah, sure.
It could help. I reckon it could help. Is that something you do with your players?
Yeah, so that's actually made for CJ and for K-Dog. I actually made a pre-game stretching video. So I can actually send that to you probably later on or something. It's a YouTube link, so you can check that out. And they use that. And we used that before going into, I think, Spring Regional Event 2, and then we won Regional Event 2. And then they're like, oh, heck, you know, these are pretty good. So, you know, I got the tricks, mate. Got the tricks. But I guess on the flip side of that, how important is it to warm up in game for you? How important is it to jump into free play and just drive around and hit some stuff?
I mean, I'm a player. I need a decent warm up. Like if I just hop on Rocket League right now, for some reason, I'm just not good. I'm a player. I have a lot of like natural talent in the game, I think, because I've always just been good, even on PS4. I just improved faster than everyone, but I've always needed more hours. Like in the past 2 weeks, especially on PC, I couldn't really have that on PS4 because I honestly didn't really play much. I don't know how I was like at the level I was because I just couldn't play that much. But on PC, I have to play like at least 70 hours past 2 weeks to keep up a good level. And then it's different for everyone, isn't it? Like some players, there's like players like Archie in EU, he thrives on like 30 hours. So, you know, it's different for everyone, and that's fine. With warm up, I need at least like 2 hours before playing, to be honest, to properly warm up. And it needs to be free play. It needs to be like a workshop map with like aerial training and then ranked twos and a bit of ranked ones, maybe. I'd never play ranked threes. I think it's terrible. But but yeah, I need a decent warm up before going into like actually playing properly.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, you know, before going into like a tournament or you know, even that LAN, you know, were you able to warm up? Or, you know, because there's a lot of players who can go into scrims they need to find a scrim before the big day, right? And they can't find a scrim. So it's like they can't do anything physical. And it's like, you know, what do I do?
Right. Well, this LAN, I mean, Rocket Baguette, they did a good job with the LAN. One thing I wish, we thought we'd be able to get there. We'd be able to like practice on the computers for like, you know, 30 minutes, an hour before. Nah, mate, straight. Literally, we got there. It was like, oh, Georgia, which is our team name, you're up. I was like, what? bear in mind, first time ever playing on PC. Me and Anya, first time ever playing on PC, 240 hertz monitors. we got there. We played our first series, just not warmed up at all. And we lost 4-2. Bear in mind, it was versus Team Exalti, which was with an RLS player. Well, two RLS players actually, and a good ball player. But you know, 4-2, it was a decent result. We just weren't warmed up. We just slapped the FPS down to 60 FPS. We were there, me and Anya, PS4 players playing on PC for the first time, playing on 60 FPS because we couldn't handle the frames. But yeah, I mean, we didn't get a warm up. But then we went into our second series. We were warmed up and we actually went 3-0 down and reverse swept in a best of seven, which is pretty cool. Game 7, I see. But yeah, that was one mistake of the tournament. You couldn't warm up.
Yeah, for sure. Annoying. And I guess, do you guys do like a vocal warm up? Like you build like comms and you build that synergy with the lads. And is that something you guys do? Because I know for us, before going into the regional, all regionals, we always just used to play music. CJ was a DJ and he used to just crank music and that used to be our vibe. Like a
hype thing. To be fair, I reckon OC teams are quite like hype because you guys seem quite like bubbly personality. For me, I prefer, I'm a player that runs on, I'm sure you've seen this like graph. It's like It's like the arousal theory, where if you play on like players that are better on lower, you know, kind of spectrum, and then players that are really hyped on the higher ends of spectrum. I'm very low. I like things to be extremely calm. And I don't know if you've seen our comms at Dinitas, but I'll have to link you. I'll have to link you a video of mine later. But if you haven't seen that, but they're quite high. So I had to kind of get used to that. So we don't really. I don't really want to give too much away of our warm-ups, but we sometimes do a little exercise and do a few comms in between that, but we don't really like shout those. But then obviously in game, we're quite hype with our comms. I still don't know if that's the best thing for me. I've always said that like that's something we need to change. I think we might change it a little bit, but I'm not going to give too much away on that. But yeah, like I said, I'm kind of a low, a player that does well on low kind of energy. Or not low energy, but you know what I mean, a lower climate in that regard.
Yeah, you're pretty much you're in your little zone.
That's
the zone you want to remain in.
Yeah.
But is that different to go from such a nice relaxed position to bang, you know, straight into high pressure comms?
I mean, yeah, it's like I said, like, I had to adjust to it obviously when I go back to tennis. I was quite like a low reserve. I was quite a reserve player. Like, I wouldn't shout much. I wouldn't. You know, I never really got too annoyed. But then, obviously, on Stormtroopers, I was still, like, relatively low energy. But here and there, you know, when you're beating these RCS teams, you got to shout a little bit. But the comms were nothing. And then you go into Dinitas and it's like, oh, okay. But I don't have to adjust to it in a ton because I'm so used to it. Obviously, I did our first split with them. We practiced every day. You get used to it quickly, so it's not too much of an issue nowadays, but I guess it was at the start, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess on that tangent, how important is good, crisp, quality comms in your opinion? Because I've had a chat with a couple of other players and, you know, sometimes they're not really comming, you know, the right key information. And I guess, you know, when you're in those situations in a best seven, it's down to game, you know, it's like you want to make sure that you're comming the crucial information, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think our comms kind of they do need some work. I think we have good information being said, but then sometimes a little bit of useless information that doesn't need to be said creeps in. I feel like there has to be a balance, and we don't have that balance right just yet, but we'll figure out next bit for sure. But it's, you know, you have to have like good useful information, but you also have, you need to let your teammates have time to think about what they want to do when they're on the ball and not overcrowd the comms. And I also honestly think Rook League is, I don't watch too many other esports, so I'm not too familiar, but like, I genuinely think Rook League is the game where I don't think you need comms as much as people like vouch for it. I know some teams, like some quite decent teams. I mean, I think Magnifico, I don't know if you're familiar with Team Atomic, Dementor and Greasy back in RCS season, like the first split of RCSX. Yeah. I heard somewhere that they played a regional with no comms and they did really well with it. And like, honestly, we've experimented with no comms at Dig and some scrims to warm up, and it actually works better than you think, because it forces you to think about what your teammate's doing, and it forces you to think about your positioning more and how it's going to benefit your teammate. So Rocket League is a bit of a weird game. I honestly feel like comms they're not as necessary as people say, but you know, there's two sides to the argument. You got to get some useful information here and there, but I don't think it needs to be like too much. But then you go into like other games. I think it's like League. I watch like a comms video and it's like mental. It's crazy.
Yeah, for sure. Like I used to do some CS coaching, and you know, I'm currently helping with the Valorant team, and you know, just thinking about some of their comms is pretty much like, they always say that, you know, try and best paint the picture without, you know, actually being able to see what they're saying. And I really like that kind of no comms kind of strap, because it allows you to, I guess, develop trust within the guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really a good approach, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting one. I feel like it can be played about with a little bit more to see what's right. I think a lot of the things in this game, they're very untouched, I guess you could say. Like, the game's only been out for 5 years. I know it's like a decent amount of time, but I think there's a lot of things that can be worked on and people haven't like noticed. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it goes a little bit with the comms in that regard.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. And I guess another element that I wanted to have a chat about is this whole idea of sleep. And, you know, so do you have a current sleep routine or a schedule or anything you stick to?
I mean, I try to get 7.5 hours at least. Sometimes when there's like, I tweeted out like a few weeks ago, I was like, is there a way you can, you know, run perfectly fine off low sleep? Because I don't like wasting time. I wish you just didn't have to sleep, because you'd be so efficient. Imagine that, that'd be sick. But like, there is no way you can kind of work around that. You need a good amount of sleep. Mm-hmm. And that is different for everyone. I'm sure you know, like some people work fine, or they work better off 6 hours of sleep. Some people need 8.5, some people need 7.5. And I've still yet to find that. That's actually genuinely one of my things. Like, I'm not even saying this. That's one of my things that I'm going to do this summer, is find out like the perfect amount of sleep that I need. And it could be something weird, like 7 hours, 15, like, you know, but everyone works differently. But like, yeah, like I said, I try to get 7.5 hours, especially on tournament like days.
Yeah.
But there's no use to, one thing I found is there's no use to doing that if you're going to break it up elsewhere, like even on non-tournament days, because it's not so let's say like I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. I got like 5 hours 50, because I was up to a quite late time, just I needed to do something, and I had this call at 9 a.m. my time, obviously, so I was forced to get a little bit lower hours sleep. But that's what I mean, you can't, I shouldn't be like breaking it up like that. I don't think that's how it works. You need to set it and get 7.5 every night, because it's about consistency, right?
Consistency, 100%.
If you get 7.5 hours every night, you wake up, you're confident your body will be performing right. You're confident your brain will be performing right, and that's what it does to you. It's just confidence. And obviously, it's like neurological effects, like psychological, physiological effects. Like you will perform better, but it's also about confidence, I think, in that your body will do the right thing. But then when you've done what I've done, it's like you've got 5 hours 50 this night. You're going to get 8 hours that night. And then there's a tournament, there's 7.5 hours. It's not how it works. You're not just going to wake up like, oh, I've got 7.5 hours. That's perfect. You need to be consistent every day with it. So that's something that's something that everyone could approve. But yeah, I've actually had quite a few chats with people before this. Even last night, I was talking to someone about this. Like, I'm going to try to, you know, stick to that over the summer and see what it does. Because I think it makes you happier as well. If you're consistent with routine, because it gives you a solid base to work off, whether that's like happiness or competitiveness, whatever you're doing.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, 7.5 hours is what I try to get before tournaments, really.
Yeah, for sure. That's brilliant. And I think that's fantastic that you're actually acknowledging that, because I think that there's a lot of players that are kind of like, yeah, it's all right, I'll just get like X amount of hours. And they're not really holistically, you know, looking towards that and, you know, trying to find a balance that works for them. And, you know, I guess as you mentioned, you know, it's especially difficult when you have tournaments where they might be an early start, like a 9 a.m. start, and you have to be, boom, ready to go as soon as you wake up. And that's difficult to do for some players, right? Especially those that stay up to 2, 3, 4 a.m. and then wake up at usually like 12 p.m. or something. It's like that balance isn't there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's different for everyone. I mean, some people, you know, they might play better like that, but I don't think they would. I think everyone would benefit off having a set amount of hours per night, you know, getting up relatively early each day. But yeah, like, it's definitely an important thing to think about. I think it also helps because I study kind of this kind of stuff. So it also helps in that regard. Like, I'm also naturally just very interested in it. I'd like to start reading up on like more like that, more stuff like that. But some people just don't, you know, they don't see it yet. And, you know, I mean, everyone's different, but I think it does help everyone really if they properly focused into it.
Hey, one step ahead of the game, man. One step ahead. I guess another one that we can try and tick off is this whole permission of exercise. And I mean, I'm pretty sure you're pretty across that, especially with tennis. So, you know, obviously you mentioned you had some injuries earlier. So are you still participating in any, you know, external recreational exercise?
So honestly, I'm not even that good in that regard. Like, I've kind of stopped. I'm not going to lie. Because, you know, I'm, I need to I sometimes go out for runs, but I need to get more consistent. Like I said, this summer, you've caught me out. You've done the interview at a wrong time, man. You need to do it after. We should do one after
this
summer.
This is motivation. This is motivation for summer.
We need to do a before one. We're going to do
before
one
and post.
After, yeah. And we're going to see if I've stuck to what I've said. But I want to get like a, you know, do an hour run a day. I still do like, I do like a lot of, you know, just like body weight exercise still, just to keep up like physical strength. I do a decent amount of stretching, like foam roll and stuff like that. But like I said, I need to still be a little bit more physical active. I get too caught up in being in my room all day and working towards like my goals on my PC and stuff. But it takes a lot of time. But like, yeah, I need to get better in that regard. But I still value it a lot. I value it. Despite what I say and what I do, I still value it, you know, a lot. I think if I woke up, it all ties together, doesn't it? If you got, I'm sure you're going to talk about nutrition, but if you had a good amount, a good meal, a good diet every day consistently, and then you get a good amount of sleep, and then you get a good amount of water, and you also exercise the same amount of time or similar times before tournaments, you've got that routine. It's about consistency, and you're setting you're setting yourself for success, really. And that's something that kind of need to work on. I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm sure no one really does it perfectly. But yeah, I value it a lot. I just need to do it.
Man, I reckon you should come on MindClickers and you can take my spot and you can do my interviews. Yeah, I think it's fantastic to see that you're acknowledging that, man, because, you know, definitely I've had a chat with, you know, some previous players and, you know, a couple of other guys, you know, even a couple of years back, and, you know, there hasn't been not really that consistent kind of story that you've kind of, you know, brought a narrative upon. And I think that's fantastic to see that you're, I guess, holistically addressing all the areas. And I think, you know, obviously working towards, you know, looking at doing sports science obviously contributes to that, but I think it's fantastic. And, you know, I think it's I'm actually really surprised and I'm really glad in that way, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting topic. I mean, it's quite like under thought about. That's not even the right term, but we'll go with it. It's 9 a.m. Who cares? But like, you know, it's, if you're feeling good, you're going to do well, and that's whatever it is. You know, I've always noticed, like, if the sun's like really high outside, or if it's like, if it's just a blue sky, I'll always play better in game, because like I'm looking at it, it's a nice day, the room's bright, like it looks, you're just feeling good, you're feeling better, you're just gonna feel better in game as well, or in sport, whatever you're doing. So yeah, it's an interesting topic for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And so do you have anyone that does like performance coaching or like psychology or anything at Dignitas that helps you, assist you?
So obviously we've got Verge, he's the coach in game. We've brought on, all right, Dig, if you're planning on announcing this and you've not announced it, then unlucky, mate, you've took too long. But yeah, they bring in like a quite a high level sports psychologist. Unfortunately, it was just coming to the end. It was literally like halfway through regional three, I think, when we like brought him on, and we haven't really started fully working with him. I've had a couple conversations with him just to get to know him, but he's very, very good, like very qualified at his job, and it'll be interesting to see what he kind of brings to the team, hopefully next season, whatever it is. And I know he works with some of the other Dig teams, like the Dig League team, I think he works with a little bit. But yeah, he's for sure, like it would benefit us a lot, I think, especially me. Because I value that a lot. So yeah, they've brought someone on. Unlucky if you plan to announce it, I've done it for you. There you go. I'm gonna get kicked next week.
We'll see that. Apparently Jack is now being kicked. KFC'd. He's been KFC'd. But no, that's fantastic. And I think that kind of spurs down another conversation line that which I've been thinking about quite recently as well, is that the kind of story of, you know, obviously, you know, you have your tier one esports teams, and you know, most of them have the resources to invest into external and health professionals, you know, your physiotherapists, sports psychologists, sleep psychologists, you know, everyone within that kind of domain scene. So do you think that, I guess, it's unfair that, I guess, there's a team that has all this backing going against a team that doesn't have any of that backing?
Not at all. It's a weird one, because like, I have quite a different approach to just general life, like, than other people. Right. Like, if I think people who who are successful are smarter than everyone thinks. Mm-hmm. They're smarter than people think. They've used what they've got to make that success. And that's kind of similar with us. You know, if the org is bigger, they've clearly done more to get to that status. They've clearly achieved more. They deserve it more technically. Mm-hmm. So you know, they're using what they've got, and that just means that the other team, they're at a lower level and they're unlucky. You're at a disadvantage, and that's how life works. If you're, you know, mm-hmm. big people, big organizations, big companies, they beat the small ones, and that's just how life works, and it's how it should work. You can't give everyone an equal playing field, because, like, you know, else what's the point of trying to get better, you know? Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, I mean, I guess it's unfair on the players, but then just work harder, you know. You get to that org. Why don't you try and get to that org instead? You know.
But yeah, I guess that's why OCE is never going to be able to beat EU or NA.
Who knows? Maybe one day.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, our top three is pretty much, you know, Ground Zero, Renegades, and Cringe. And, you know, I think, you know, Ground Zero, I have a sleep psychologist working with those guys. Yeah, and he's actually my mentor, Daniel Bonner, and he's really good. So he, you know, really worked with those guys. So it's going to be interesting to see those guys, you know, really start to stem forward. But I mean, you know, working with the Renegades now, it's definitely been really good. So it's definitely going to see where we can take that as well.
Yeah. Oh, wait. That's quite interesting. I might have to just kind of listen into a few of the calls. Just hack the computer, see what they're saying. I mean, Ground Zero is doing pretty well. So
yeah, they are doing well. I guess the next kind of segment that I wanted to roll into is just a little bit more about, I guess, you know, Rocket League psychology and, you know, yourself and how you see everything. And, you know, I guess obviously being such a good ones player, let's start there. So obviously ones, you know, I've had a chat with a couple of guys and even Kami said it's just such a mental game. Is that how you see it?
I mean, it is. Like I said, I came from tennis, so it's a solo, well, it's primarily a solo sport. Obviously you can play doubles. But I've always been an extremely I like to do things myself. I mean, like, it's not unsociable. Like, I prefer working individually compared to group projects, for example. Yeah. But I like to do things solo. And that's why I just hopped into one straight away as soon as I started playing Rocket League, because it's what I knew. And, you know, so I've always had a bit of an advantage on that regard. I don't get annoyed to be honest, when playing ones at all. Because, you know, I don't see the point of it. Like, if you're losing, you're clearly not as good as the opponent in that game. And it doesn't mean you're not as good as them overall. They played better than you in that game. Like, what's there to get annoyed about? You, it's your fault. They played well. Learn from it. Like, you know, and people don't see it like that. And people always come into my streams and ask me, like, how do you not get annoyed? I always get frustrated when playing ranked. Like, one, it's ranked. Doesn't really mean it's not the end of the world. Two, it's, you know, what's the point? You're not going to play better from getting frustrated. You're not going to learn from it because your mind is crowded. You're not thinking straight. So, but yeah, I mean, ones is definitely a mental game. I also think it's a very different game mode. Like there's so many, like, because I've played ones for so long, and this seems quite egotistical to say, but if you gave me any one scenario, I could probably tell you the best play in that scenario. And that's just because ones is a very, it doesn't have as many variables as threes, obviously, because there's not as many players on the pitch. There's not as much boost on the pitch as in terms of total player boost. So there's not as many things that can happen. There's one scenario, and that's all you have to think about is your boost, the ball, and your opponent. And that's compared to about 16 different things in threes. So ones is a different game mode. You can pinpoint what you should do best in each scenario. And there is a best play in each scenario, I think. Where in threes, it's a little bit more interchangeable. But yeah, ones is a very weird game. It's strange. I'd love to see it represented a little bit more in tournaments and stuff, because I think I mean, I'm going off a bit off tangent here, but it holds so much hype. Ones, I was talking to Johnny about this. Technically, ones is the best for viewer retention. And because it has so many goals in it. There's so many more hype moments in ones compared to threes. And yep. the only reason threes is better is because it's been represented for longer. If ones was the game mode where like it started out Rocket League, it'd be the best, and threes would be like what ones is right now.
Yeah.
And you also, I feel like with threes, it also does have an advantage in terms of personality. Like, I feel like players, they can be themselves a little bit more and like showcase their personality because they're with other people. Like, players get to know, or fans get to know them a little bit better because they're like working off each other's personalities, and you see them at LANs with each other, and it's like a cool kind of thing to see people working together and being friends with one another. Mm-hmm. So that maybe that's something that ones doesn't have. So possibly that's why it's liked more among fans. But yeah, ones is it's an interesting game mode for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, Jackie, but if I could reach out and give you a fist bump, I would right now, man. Brilliant. Yeah, I love that answer because, you know, funnily enough, I'm the one that really loves ones as well. Like, you know, threes is good because I come from a StarCraft background, and StarCraft's pretty much, you know, one-man army. It's you versus them, and everything in between that is up to you, and it's pretty much an even playing field right at the get-go, right? And as soon as you start, it's just pure skill, which differentiates yourself between the opponent. Exactly. So I think, you know, that perfect mindset of being able to incorporate, you know, as soon as you go, it's everything that's up to you. And if you overstep, or if you overdo something, that's on yourself. And, you know, you learn from that experience. And, you know, I think that's crucial. And I think, you know, being able to explore that and work on that and be exposed to that environment where you can see those vulnerabilities and then you can work on them again and again and build that repetition up is when you can become a better player.
Yeah, I mean, I've always said ones is the best to improve from for a starting player up until you get to, honestly, RCS, because it's factually correct because you're hitting the ball more. So technically you're right. Improving your mechanics more.
Exactly.
Because obviously if you hit, every time you hit the ball, you're slightly improving your mechanics in some way. And it also teaches you, like you said, you see your mistakes more often, because every time you concede, that is down to you. Like in twos, I'm not gonna go back to the like classic blaming teammates, but sometimes it is their fault, and you won't learn from every goal. Yeah, and that's just how it works. And sometimes it's your fault, and your teammate won't learn from every goal. But in ones, you have an opportunity to learn from every goal you concede. Yeah. So it's definitely the best for improvement, because you can point out what you did wrong better, and you can fix that. You can fix that more easily.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that comes down to, I guess, people don't want to feel like they're not as good as they think they are? They go into twos or threes, or, you know, knowing that I can rely on my opponents because, you know, maybe I'm not the best, but there's even maybe a self-confidence doubt about their own abilities and their own skill level.
Maybe. I mean, I think about it more as if like they never played it when they first started Rocket League. They went into twos or threes more. So they're more used to that. And it's what you're comfortable with. You're going to be better at what you're comfortable with. You're going to be more confident at what you're more comfortable with. And I think it's just kind of reluctance in some regards as well. Like, some people don't want to play ones. And I also think once you get to RSS level, if you've been playing twos and threes to get there the whole time, you might as well stick to it. I don't think you're going to gain that much from playing ones. But yeah. I also think if a ones player gets to RCS, they're still going to gain more from ones, because they've built their playstyle off of that. So for me, for example, I play best when I'm grinding ones. And then I stop grinding ones for some reason, and I start playing a little bit worse. And I'm like, okay, well, get back to that, because that's what you've done all this time to improve. So
yeah.
Keep at it. You know, it's what you know. So I don't think it, like, I'm not one of those people where it's like, oh, you need to play ones, because you don't. There's plenty of players that are good RSS players, or the best RSS players, without playing a lot of ones. But I also think you're missing out on key skills. Basically, I think if you play ones from the get-go, you'll become a better player than if you played twos or threes from starting to RSS. That's what I think. Because ones players, if you look at ones players, all of us, we have a naturally faster improvement rate, I think, than any other player. You look at me. I had an extremely fast improvement rate. I still do. Joris had an extremely fast improvement rate. First Killer had an extremely fast improvement rate. Monkey Moon was the ones main on PS4 for a while. Fast improvement rate. There's so many players, and there's obviously a few scenarios where these top ones players didn't quite make it into RCS, but there's more so that they did. So yeah, I think it's an important game mode, but I don't think it's worth a player like Turbo, for example. I don't think he's going to benefit from playing ones because, you know, he's not built his playstyle off that.
Yeah,
and that's fine. But I do recommend players starting out or players anywhere from, if you're not RCS, play ones. That's the key, really, I think.
For sure. Love that. And I guess if you chip away and you grind ones for such a long time, is it difficult to make that approach then into going to six mans? Because then you've got to worry about two other people in your team.
Yeah, I mean, I was, like I said, on PS4, I was like, people call me a ones main still now. Like, that's fair because like people know me from ones, even though technically ones is like by far my least played game mode. But people still know me as that, and that's fine. But like, I was a proper ones main on PS4 and Xbox. Like, oh yeah, I started on Xbox. I did say that. And then I moved to PS4 on 2016 Christmas. But yeah, I was a hard ones main. And then when I started playing PS4, six mans on PS4, I got to rank B, I think. Well, I think I might have got to B plus when I was first introduced a little bit, but I was not good at threes because I just didn't understand it. I couldn't rotate well. I couldn't position well for it. My aerials were slightly lacking. Even when I moved to PC, my aerials were lacking. My position was lacking. My rotation was lacking. My decision-making on 3v3 was lacking. And then I grinded aerials a lot. My aerials mechanics came a lot better naturally because of the PC smoothness. And six man's helped a lot with positioning. Scrims helped a lot. When I was scrimming, I started scrimming every day. Against these top bubble teams, that helped loads. And yeah, it's hard to it's definitely hard to transition at first. Some players just still haven't found it. Some players transition easier. It took me a while. I've still not fully found it. Like I said, I think I'm honestly one of the best for sure. I'm one of the best in ones, like just in terms of ones in general, but I'm also one of the best in terms of knowing one's decision making, I feel like, because I've played so much. I said earlier, if you give me a one scenario, I'll probably know the best player in that scenario. If you give me a three scenario, I'll have my hands up right now and say I probably won't know the best player in that regard because I've just not had the experience yet, and that's fine. You know, it comes with time. And players, especially me and Joris, we're very good players. If with that experience, we will for sure get a lot better. And we've not got it yet. And then players like Panda, he knows probably better players in threes. He might not be as mechanically gifted as me and Joris, but he's definitely more knowledgeable in what to do in certain scenarios and threes. And we can learn from that and improve from it. And we have, and we'll continue to do so. But yeah, the transition is hard, but it's doable for sure. Like, some players don't do it. There's some ones players that I'm not going to name off because that's a bit harsh, but they haven't fully, or they never really fully transitioned to threes, but everyone's different. You know, it takes everyone longer to improve or longer to learn things.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. And I guess another thing I wanted to pick your brain about was this whole premonition of ladder anxiety, you know, because obviously at the end of the day, ranked is a big thing for a lot of people. And just seeing that the fact they're in SSL or GC or even C or even diamond is big for some players. And, you know, queuing up is that feeling that, hey, maybe I'm going to drop down. Maybe I'm going to go div down or maybe I'm going to go a div up. But that div down is the one that really just hammers into their mindset. And it's like, oh, you know, I don't want to play because I want to stay at the same rank and I don't want to lose my thing. And maybe the other guys are just going to dig into me because I went down a rank. And how do we start to brute force that positive mindset in regards to rank to look at it as, you know, a learning opportunity?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to put this into RCS because I played, it was around December when Dignitas were playing at our best. We came third in the last regional of the second split. We came third in the major for the second split, which was crazy. We won the grid in that month. We won Beyond the Summit. We were playing very well. I especially was playing like incredibly well. I was just watching these confidence videos, because I'm not gonna lie, I struggle with confidence in Rocket League sometimes. I think it comes down to consistency of routine. Like, I need to have a consistent routine, like we were talking about earlier, to have a baseline of confidence. I've not found that yet, but I was watching these videos. I was fully confident in myself because what I did was you have to detach yourself from the game, kind of. You, it does, in the big pit, in the like grand scheme of things, it doesn't mean anything. You know, no one's, at the end of the day, no one's going to die from it. You're not going to become ill from it. Your family, the people you love are safe. The people you care about are fine. It's not going to affect your life negatively in any way if you lose. And once you take away all of that pressure from yourself, you'll have an easier time of relaxing and naturally having more fun and playing better. And that's when you can improve most. But with ranked, you can't really say anything other than just improve from it and look to improve, because that's the best thing you can do. And every pro player says it. So technically you should be listening to those players, because they're at the top of the game. If every pro player says, just play ranked to improve, just try it. You know, what's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to try it for a few games. You're not going to enjoy it. And you go back to worrying. But you won't do that, because you'll notice improvements. Everyone has it, don't they? Like, everyone has it when they first start games. You know, you want to win, you want to improve, you get to that next rank, and you hate it when you drop down. But that's part and parcel of it. And it's about coping, finding a way to cope with yourself and finding a way to detach yourself from any of the negative worries that, or negative outcomes that you think can come for that, but actually don't.
Yeah, I really love that. I love that. I definitely resonate with that kind of mindset detachment theory, where you're able to dissociate yourself from the game. And, you know, as you said, at the end of the day, you know, nothing's going to change. You know, all's going to change is some pixels on a screen, realistically, at the end of the day. So being able to have that mindset is very powerful. And, you know, it's, you know, obviously there's going to be people who really can't start to get over that bridge. And, you know, I think it's about providing, you know, support in different situations. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's just a number. And, you know, as they say, we're going to go down before we go up, and that's the inevitable. We've got to learn from different experiences before we actually get to the top. And, you know, each loss should be taken as an experience on why that happened and why that went wrong. And I guess that leads me into my neck kind of bit in regards to, I guess, analysis and looking back at games. So do you go back and watch? How many replays do you watch, or how does that process look like, especially after like a regional or something?
Oh yeah, so we do a lot of replay analysis at Dignitas. We were genuinely doing it every day for like an hour. Doing a lot, because one thing we struggle with in my team is we have the skill. Everyone knows we have the skill. We've got a 2-time world champion who's a sick player. We've got me and Joris, who are like very, very naturally talented and proven players, like up and coming players. Like, everyone knows we have probably like some of the highest skill in terms of teams right now, but.
Yeah,
the things we struggle with is consistency, and that comes with just honestly probably my and Joris's like lack of knowledge and freeze. Like we might make the team a little bit awkward sometimes here and there, or we might not fit in with Panda, or me and Joris might not get in the right like kind of wavelength, and that just comes with, we need to play together more and we need to learn threes a little bit more. So we did a lot of replay analysis. Panda and Verge helped us out a lot. And yeah, I mean, I actually don't analyze my replays that often. I'm not sure if I should, because I should do a little bit. I'm going to start experimenting that with a little bit, like maybe like 20 minutes a day, just start off some more and see how it works. I actually improve more from looking at other people's replays. So I spent a lot of time looking at players that I almost aspire to be like, or I respect their play style. And that's two players in particular, is Monkey Moon and First Killer. So obviously I think they're the best in the EU and the best in the NA, and one of them is the best in the world. I can't tell who, but I don't care. And like, I'd look at Monkey Moon's replays for age, like so many times, and take little things from his. I'd look at First Killer's and look at his mechanics and what he does in each situation, and how he's genuinely just like that fast and just that perfectly mechanically. And I'd kind of combine the two and try, and it did work. And it still works, you know. The thing is, if you're looking at a player and if you kind of associate yourself with that player, you put yourself to it, you hold yourself to a certain level, and you'll think subconsciously, or maybe not subconsciously, you should probably actively think that, like, what would they do in this scenario, and try and do that. If it doesn't work, wasn't the right player, you know. And that's kind of how I like learn, really, is looking at more of a others replays apart from myself, but I think I do need to maybe start looking at myself a little bit. It would help, I reckon. Maybe I'll start doing that. You're going to make me a better player.
I'm going to hold you accountable that Jackie boy. Nice. Yeah, I definitely agree. I definitely think that, you know, it's very individualized in regards to replay analysis. And, you know, over at the Renegades, we have a very different approach in regards to sitting down as a team and then taking it away and, you know, each individually looking at their own replays. And you know, I think that's crucial when you have that ability to sit down as a team and look through a replay analysis and understand, you know, what went wrong and why that one went wrong and most importantly, what could we have done better or different? And that's the things that you take away that lead you into the next game and just little bits of information that's extracted in order to ensure that future performances are a bit better.
Yeah, I think also like one thing that is very undervalued, I don't think any teams do it. I mean, we hinted on it and we said we would do it, but I don't think we've properly done it at Dig, is looking at your teammates' replays. Because the reason BDS are, in my opinion, the best, well, they are the best in the EU, maybe the best in the world, is they have the individual skill. We all know that the players are insane, but they also just know each other. If you look at their replays, I don't know if you watch them, but they honestly, like, when their teammate is about to hit the ball, they know exactly what they're going to do with it, and they position themselves perfectly for that. And it doesn't matter if it's the person next to them that's about to hit next, or the person behind them, like covering third man. They always just position themselves perfectly for each other's hits. And I don't think they looked at each other's replays, but I think they're just stupid. Like, I just think they're stupidly good at the game. But I think that is something that, you know, we said we would do it, Dig. I think it was something we need to do a bit more, and everyone should probably do, is watch your teammates' replays, because if you learn what your teammate will do in certain scenarios, you can position yourselves better for that, and you can, you know, predict that perfectly almost. You'll all become more fluid with each other and what you're going to do. So that's something I'm probably going to do. I'm taking away a lot from this conversation.
That's good, man. That's good. Yeah, hell yeah. And I guess that kind of comes back to what we chatted about earlier, right, in regards to trust and having that rapport and synergy with your teammates as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's all part and parcel of it, right?
Yeah, for sure, definitely. What else? So another thing that I guess a big one actually that brought up, which was a listener request, was dealing with toxicity and salt. So how do you deal with, you know, a troll or a toxic or, you know, all that kind of stuff?
I'll talk about, like, because obviously I assume the viewer, is this a viewer question, do you say?
So currently they're in, I think they said they're in champ.
They'd be ranked, right? Yeah. I'll talk about ranked, and then I'll talk about, like, also, like, Twitch chat trolls and stuff like
that. Okay, let's do the dub.
Yeah. In ranked, like, obviously you get players being toxic to you, but realistically you're not going to see them again, or you might see them again, but you're not going to see them IRL. like, who cares? You need to have an ego. An ego isn't very important. People always associate an ego with a bad term, but I mean, it's, if you look at the definition of an ego, it's basically everyone has one. It's just different levels, right? And you need to have some sort of good ego that you don't care what they say, because in the long, it doesn't mean anything. Who are they? Like, they're just some guy. They're just some guy that's Q&T's, right? And it's a very tough thing to advise on, isn't it? Like, because we can just say, oh, I just don't care, but like, everyone cares. Even myself, when I get like a toxic teammate, it's like, oh mate, shut up. Like, and you kind of get thrown off by it. You're like, oh, maybe I'm playing bad. And everyone does it. So yeah, I mean, honestly, turn chat off. Why not? Turn chat off, and literally turn all chat off. Like, even teammate chat. Like, if you just even on kickoffs, you'll be like, oh, but then we won't communicate who goes on kickoffs. Well, just don't go on kickoffs, and if they go, just let them go every time. You know, and you'll still learn from the game, and you won't have to deal with these toxic players. And yeah, you'll play a lot better from it. Honestly, just. That's the only real advice that you can actually give for that regard. Unfortunately, I don't know if you've got anything that, you know, you can probably talk about more in terms of dealing with ranked teammates that are toxic.
I think disabling comms is probably the biggest one that I advised a couple of my players do in the past. And I actually read a blog post for the Mindclickers website in regards to dealing with toxicity and salt. And for that blog post, I interviewed a League of Legends Grandmaster, and they adopted something that I did back in my StarCraft 2 days when I was pushing into Grandmaster as well when I was in Masters. And that was, you know, as sinister as it sounds, it's to think that, you know, the troll's life, you know, whoever they are outside of the game, their life is the absolute worst.
Yeah.
Like they have borderline, like everything is completely the worst thing they could possibly be. And and they're just venting. They're just taking that out on you in the game. So, yeah. You know, by adopting that mindset, it helps you to kind of, you know, even feel sorry for them in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And that helps.
That is good. Yeah, that is a good way. I mean, and it could be true. A lot of times, you find these players, you know, they are unfortunately the ones that are, they deal with some weird stuff around and they can't take it out in a game or something that they can control. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, that is I rate that, you know, because then you value yourself more and you value what you have
right
to be lucky, and you don't actually that's a way, I feel like that's a way to detach any negative outcomes that you think that may happen because of the toxic and kind of ranked from it, and realize that it's not the end of the world. You know, you move on to the next game, and it's not affected you really. But yeah, that's quite good.
Yeah,
in terms of like Twitch chat trolls and like you always like load up Twitter and you see like, oh, the classic, right? The classic.
What's
like,
the classic?
Right. Just if any team loses in Rocket League, I don't know if it's like this in any of games. If a team loses in Rocket League, it's never because the other team plays well. It's that team through. Team through. Like, what? That just doesn't make sense. It's like, it's like whenever you lose, you throw. Nah, the other guys can't play well. It's you throwing. Like, what? That is the stupidest thing. And with Rocket League, Rocket League is such a hard game to actually see what a player is actually good at, unless you're playing it. So I believe fans and viewers incorrectly identify what players are actually good at, and then you ask a pro player who plays that player, and they'll say something completely different.
Right.
And then you get fans saying like, oh, you should have done this, you should have done that, or like they think you're playing bad when you're actually playing, you know, pretty well. You're just not doing like what they expect you to be doing, and it's so weird. And you got to turn that off. And honestly, you just got to think I'm quite good in that regard. Like I don't really care about other people because like, they're not who I care about. Like, the people who I care about, I know who I care about. That it's like my family, some of my friends, like girlfriend, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and that's who you care about. And anyone else doesn't matter to you, or they shouldn't. Exactly. It's like I'm learning to drive recently. Like, I'm on my sixth lesson, and like, I always get like my parents or like other people talk to me like, oh, you need to not worry about people behind you or like stuff like that in the cars. But I'm like, well, I don't care anyway, because I genuinely couldn't care about them. Like, I honestly, if like I had a guy, like if someone started having a go at me, like, if I like cut them off or something, I started having a go at me, but I genuinely couldn't care, because it's like, who are you? Like, it doesn't actually matter to me. Like, you probably I'm happy with my life. You probably live a worse life than me, mate. Like, it's an ego thing. You have to have an ego about it. And you have to detach yourself from other people and think you're better than them. And that's how you stop caring. Cause then like you also, this is going to turn, everyone's going to hate me by the end of this, but you start to look at like people on Reddit. And I'm like, well, mate, you spend all day on Reddit. That's all I need to know about you. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you spend all day like on Twitch or whatever, just like they're not doing anything productive, and then you think yourself, you're doing things productive, you're technically better than them, you're doing more than them, and you're not actually better than them, but you have to think that way and detach yourselves from any negativity that they bring to you, because you know, you like, you think in life, I think if you have positive things around you, you'll be more positive yourself, and positive things will come to you. I think it stems from even things like the people you hang around with, and the conversations you enter daily, and you talk about, to the things you kind of indulge yourself into. So like social media, definitely. I think social media is absolutely terrible. Like, it's shocking because it gives people a platform to say whatever they want when they shouldn't have that platform. And it gives everyone an equal platform. And an equal platform is the worst thing you can give to anyone, because it gives people that don't deserve that the opportunity. And it also gives the people that deserve more and no opportunity to have more say. And then you think things about like the music you listen to, like that affects it massively. And just the conversations you talk about every day, you are what you do, and obviously everything you've done in life like leads up to what you do now and makes you who you are. If you talk about a certain thing more, you'll be likely to think about that certain thing more, and that's just a fact. So if you talk about, or if you see people talking about how bad you played more, you'll think about how bad you played more, and you kind of have to ignore it. And that is the worst advice you can ever give to anyone, but it's what you have to do. It's just ignore it.
It's hard.
It does, like I'm not perfect. Like, I still load up Reddit after a match sometimes and be like, oh, okay, apparently Jack, you missed that open, that sick. I know. Like, do you know what I mean? Or like load up Reddit or load up Twitter, it's like, oh, okay, dig through, okay, great. It's like, oh
yeah.
So yeah, it's when you shouldn't do, but yeah, like people need to be more careful with what they say, honestly. Everyone gets affected way more than they say. It's one of the worst things that comes with this job is people think we're going on a massive tangent, but I don't care. I love this topic.
Philosophy 101.
People think pro players have a perfect life. I hate it. People genuinely, because even myself included, like when I was like 13 watching pro players, I think, oh, their life must be perfect, man. Like they play games every day, all day. They can do that. They get paid for it. They're in RCS. What's wrong with their life, you know? And that's just not how it works, you know? Like people will find when you get to pro level, it's not what you think. It's fun. I'm not saying I hate it. I'm not saying I hate it at all. I enjoy it massively, but it's not, it doesn't automatically fix all the bad things in your life. You know, anything that comes along that's bad in your life, it doesn't just, oh, it doesn't matter because I'm in RCS, you know, that's not how it works. And people genuinely think pro players are celebrities because we have a very young fan base and a very naive community, I think, unfortunately. And, you know, that's just because it's gaming. And they think you're a celebrity. They think you won't see all this this stuff, or they think you won't get affected by it, or they think you shouldn't get affected by it because you're in RCS. Who cares? Yeah. You're in RCS. That's all that matters. But that's not, we're people. Like, we are genuine, just the same people. I don't understand people. I do understand because I used to do it, but it's like people are like, oh my God, this pro player replied to me. And it's like, I go to the shop every day. Like, I walk to town. Like, I can walk to town every day like you do. I walk to school every day like you do. Like, we're the same people. Like, you know, people just don't see it. And then that's the worst, because then they start to say things that they wouldn't say to your face, or they wouldn't say to a player. They wouldn't say to a person that they know would acknowledge that, and they think you wouldn't acknowledge it. So they say it anyway. And then they start saying horrible things, and then you acknowledge that. And then they're like, oh, I didn't mean that. Sorry, you're my favorite player. And it's like, well, okay, mate. Well, why would you say it? Because you thought that I'm some sort of celebrity. I wouldn't see that or wouldn't get affected by that. It's just not how it works. It's just not how it works at all.
But yeah, so there's like a fame bias almost.
Yeah, people think pro players are like some sort of celebrity, honestly, I think. But we're not at all. It's just, mate, I'm Jack. I'm just a guy. Like, you know, it's strange. But I do understand it, but like, it shouldn't be that way.
How do you think it should change?
It can't because it's in everything. It's in all esports. It's in all sports. It's in all anything, you know, especially Rocket League. It can't change because, you know, how can it, you know, like they will always think that these guys are celebrities because they are where they want to be. The fans want to be in your position. They'd love to be playing games and getting paid for it every day, or being RCS and being the best at something. And then they just attach that to you and think like, oh, his life must be perfect because it's what I think my life wants to be. And it's not. it's not like they'll get to that level, then they'll get to that level and realize that it's not all what they thought it was, and they'll still enjoy it, but they'll enjoy it for other reasons. And this is my whole point, is I'm not saying I don't enjoy it, but I'm saying I enjoy it, but not for the reasons I thought I would enjoy it. Like when I was like 13 watching, you know, Panda on Dig or whatever, I thought, I was like, oh, he's sick. He's, you know, he's got everything he wants, man. But like, it's not that. You enjoy it for different reasons, and you enjoy it for what it is, and it's not what other people think it is. I don't think you can change it. It's, like I said, we've got a very young fan base, very naive community at times, and that just comes with maturity, and you know, you can't really change it.
Yeah. And I think the same tangent pretty much goes for wealth and money as well, right? Like, if you suddenly get like $1 million and it's like, well, yes, I've got $1 million. Yes, I can solve some of these problems, but you know, those problems are still going to persist. And, you know, those other things are going to, not much is going to change. And you know, I'm still going to be who I am. I'm still going to go to the shops. I'm going to do all these external things.
Exactly.
And it's just an external thing, right?
Yeah. I'm not saying at all I'm on the same level as like these like professional footballers, but like you kind of have, because obviously I'm one of the best in the world at something. They're one of the best in the world at something. You can kind of relate the two. I no longer think of these guys as some sort of like gods. Like, I just look at them as normal people. Like if I saw a celebrity, I genuinely just wouldn't get like that starstruck anymore, just because like, they're just regular people. They will think the same as well. They will think like, how did this happen? They were just one day they were playing football in their back garden or whatever, and the next day they're playing professionally, and nothing's really changed. They're still doing the same thing. Yeah. It's just on a different level. It's the same with money, really. I mean, I value like money a lot, because obviously like it just helps in everyday life. Like if I set myself up well and I earn a lot now, then I'll be thankful for it later in life. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't make you a better person. It doesn't change anything, you know. It's not, you still care about the same people. They're still fine no matter how much money you have. It can make things better, but you know, it doesn't change. The point is, just because someone has something, it doesn't make them better, you know.
Mm-hmm. 100% love that tangent. And I love, you know, even though, you know, we're off the cyber, I think there's some really good key crucial messages there that can be taken away. And, you know, especially if I have, you know, we have quite a lot of youth players, and, you know, whether that be, you know, primarily Rocket League or other games that are listening in, that can take away some of those mindsets that you instilled. Definitely. And I think it's powerful to have that kind of thoughts, and, you know, to acknowledge it at the least.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting topic for sure.
I guess one last thing I just wanted to quickly chat about was, I guess, this whole notion of marketing yourself in esports. So obviously, you know, you're doing YouTube, you're cranking out two vids a day over on the YT. You're on the YT right now. How important is it for you to develop yourself, whether that be on Twitch or whether that be on YouTube, or, you know, especially in regards to content?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I hinted at it like two minutes ago. I'm trying to make the most out of like what I have. You know, I'm trying to make the most money. I'm trying to have as good of a time as I can have. I'm trying to become the biggest I can have, because I know I will regret it later on in life if I don't do that. And I'm not just doing it for that. I'm not just doing it so I don't regret it. I'm also doing it because I enjoy that. And I enjoy seeing the rewards. I enjoy working really hard and benefiting massively from that. I don't see how people can live life without a goal. I've always, like a big goal. I've always had, you know, whether that was to be a professional tennis player, it was always that for years, I was trying to work towards that. Oh, someone else came along, professional rugby player, you know, and that's a huge goal. And that's very, very hard aspirations, very hard goals to work for. I don't see how you can live without that. Personally, you need something to wake up for. You need something to get out of bed for. You need something to structure your day around, and you need something to make yourself happy. And this is what, like, doing well in this makes me happy. And I really enjoy doing YouTube, because there's a lot of stats and analytics behind it. I used to be extremely into maths. And I just have like a very like mathematical mind. I love stats and numbers, because you can see exactly what's going on, and you can see trends. and the algorithm on YouTube. It's a game. You're working out what's best to put out and what does well. It comes down to little things like what you say and where you put the red circle on the thumbnail or whatever, you know, stuff like that. It really does affect it all. And it's all analytics, and that's why it's so enjoyable. And marketing yourself, like I said earlier, I want to make the most out of it. I think it's not for everyone. I put out a tweet. I don't know if you saw. I put out a tweet. It's like every pro player should be making more content on YouTube.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I get it. It's not for everyone. People aren't motivated by the money or by the status or whatever. But most people are, I think, and people, they think it's harder than it actually is. Obviously, I have an editor now, so it's not that hard. All I have to do is record. I have a thumbnail designer, so it's not that hard. All I have to do is send them the thumbnails that I want to be created. But like pro players, I think they're quite lazy, some of them, because I had a lot of messages from people. And it's not laziness. I'm not saying the people who messaged me are lazy ass. I'm going to fall out with a lot of people. But like, it's just they're not too sure of where to start, you know, and you just kind of have to throw yourself into that. And but yeah, going back to what you said, I value, you know, marketing yourself a lot. You'll see me on all social medias. I started so I've got a Discord, so obviously I try to be as active in that. Well, I'm not really that active, but I try to be. I've got a TikTok. I've got someone managing my TikTok for me. I've got an Instagram. I started Instagram yesterday, actually. I've got someone managing that for me now. I've got a YouTube, which I'm uploading twice a day. I've got a shorts channel where I'll upload clips. And what else we've got? Twitter, obviously, Reddit. I try to be active on that. And it's about engaging a community and making a community for yourself. And this is why I do these sorts of things, because it gets people to know you, right? And and like I'll say yes to most things. Like if people want to interview me, then yeah, let's do it, because it gets your name out there, and that's the biggest thing. And I also enjoy it, you know. But it also gets your name out there, and it lets people know who you are, and that's a big thing when trying to build a community. I want people to be able to watch my videos and have fun because I get quite a lot of comments saying like, oh, you know, I always go into work and I come back and watch your video every day. It's like it's like a daily thing now. It's like, that's kind of cool to me, how you're impacting someone's life positively. And I'm not saying like, oh, I'm making their life perfect, but it's just that little thing. And I used to have that, like you'd come home, every day before school, I'd watch a Squishy video. Every day, Squishy 2's video, 1's video, 3's video. It's like sick just seeing them play ranks. And that's just, it's just little things like that, just to start your day or to end your day, and stuff like that is cool. But yeah, I do value marketing yourself because it helps with, you know, getting the most out of contracts in orgs and stuff like that. And that's me saying that. And not a lot of people will say that. People hate to talk about the money side of things or like the business side of things, but it's part and parcel of it. If you're a bigger personality, you're gonna get more offers, you're gonna make the most out of it more. And like I said, I'm here to make the most out of it. I'm not letting this opportunity go to waste, you know. Because like I said, I'll regret it, and I'm not stupid. I know that people will regret it.
So, yeah. 100% yeah, respect.
And it's fun. It's so fun. I'm not gonna lie. Like Twitch is all right. Sometimes I get annoyed at my chat. I'm not going to lie. People, if you're watching this and you're in my Twitch chat, I hate you. I'm not going to lie. Like half the time, some of them are idiots, but you know, in reality, I do actually like them. But YouTube is fun. YouTube is very fun. Just seeing the stats and analysis. Like I said, I'm very like analytical person. I like that side of things.
Yeah.
It's so fun. I'm addicted to it. I'm addicted to it. It's so fun.
And I guess the big thing there in regards to analytics and the YouTube sort of stuff is for those people who start off and they only get one or two views or they get no views, and how do they push through that grind and just stick with it? So where's the motivation come from?
Yeah, I get this question a lot. I get like the Twitch, like how do I grow my Twitch channel?
Right.
And unfortunately, I'm not a good advocate for that because I came from a one scene. I had everything given to me. As soon as my first big tournament was, I qualified for Fusion. I don't know if you remember the Fusion tournament Johnny Boy held. It was like a 1v1, 2v2, 3v3 event. And me, Paul, and Dead Monster, we shouldn't have qualified, and we actually did because I played ones. I was really good at ones, so we had an advantage over the other teams. We managed to qualify instantly. Before that, I was getting like 10 views on my streams, and then as soon as I qualified for that tournament, I got like 60 views. I was like, this is insane. And then bang, day after that, 300 views. And it's just been like that ever since. So yeah. Unfortunately, I'm really not the best advocate for like giving advice on this, because I just didn't have to do it. Same with my YouTube. I started my YouTube channel when I already had an audience and when I already had a community, you know. But I can kind of attest to consistency on YouTube or Twitch. It's all about consistency. And it's because YouTube is algorithm based, which means that it's a bot who obviously decides which videos get pushed out to larger audiences or which videos get pushed out into people's suggested feeds and stuff like that. I'll give a little overview quickly. It's basically there's a few things you can do. If your video has things that are similar to other videos that are doing well, it'll probably push that out, and that can be thumbnails. So if you look at a musty thumbnail, you can try and copy that to try and, you know, push your video out there and people get into people's who watch musty suggested videos,
right?
And then stuff like that, and consistency, uploading daily, uploading once every other 2 days or once a week, whatever it is, just keeping a routine and keeping to that, because the YouTube algorithm rewards your channel for consistency. If you post similar times or similar days or similar like frequencies, you'll be rewarded for that. Same with Twitch. Twitch is horrible because you always see, I always hear big Twitch streamers talking about like, oh no, I can't take a day off because my viewers will drop by 20%,
right?
And it will take me 2 weeks to get to that 100% mark again. And Twitch is horrible, like it just does that. And unfortunately, that's just how the way it works for whatever reason. It's because it becomes a part of people's everyday routine to watch your Twitch or to watch your YouTube. And when they have a break, then they won't come back to it, because people don't come back to it. Like we as humans, we're very like, if we stick to something, we will keep doing it. As soon as we have a break, something happens. You just don't go back to that. Yeah. And that's the same with Twitch and YouTube, and that's why consistency is king on these platforms. And yeah, I mean, it's fun as well. Just have fun with it. Going on a tangent, there's like three things that you get rewarded for, I think, in life. Like if there's three things that make you successful, it's either you do something that no one else does. It's either you do something better than everyone else, or you do something that no one else wants to do. So obviously the first one being you do something no one else does, that's creating a new idea, like making something original and making people copy that off you because they think it's a good idea. Doing something else better than everyone else, that's like me in Rocky, for example. I'm one of the best in the world because, well, I am. So that makes me successful in that regard.
Yeah.
And then doing something else that no one else wants to do is, doing these challenge videos that are really like dangerous or something else. For example, that's why those channels thrive, because they are different. They're what people want to see. People haven't seen it before because no one else wants to do that. So they're putting themselves out there and doing that. And then there's a fourth one, which no one really talks about, is just being liked by other people. And I don't know if you can put this in, but that's either sexually or personality wise. And those two things, if you're either one of those two, you'll be successful. And that's probably the most important one, unfortunately, because we're naturally drawn to people that we like the personality or we like the looks of. And that's just how human nature works. And obviously we can't change the looks. So you have to work on the personality side, and you need to be hype, or you need to be what people want to hear. And I'm not the most for that. I'm not a good example for that, because I'm not the most. Like, I don't shout every time I score a goal. I actually don't react, which is terrible for YouTube and Twitch. But then you see a channel like Arsenal's. He got like 400k subs in a month or something stupid like that, because he's like reacting to every goal and he's like shouting and screaming. That's what everyone wants to see. So personality is a big part. of it. And yeah, all those things, they all play a part into doing well on YouTube and Twitch, really.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, it's that keyword just keeps popping up, and that's consistency, right? Consistency for sleep schedule, analysis, exercise, YouTube content. Consistency is the big one, hey?
Consistency is king. It's king. Yeah.
For sure, man. Well, you know, as we, I guess, turn off the gas and start to roll down the hill now towards the end of the episode, I think, you know, some of the things we've covered throughout this chat is quite expansive, right? We covered a lot in regards to, you know, your external performance. We had a philosophy class, probably a couple of philosophy lessons in there thrown in. And even, you know, even just our psychological bit in regards to Rocket League and dealing with stress and anxiety and the ranked mindset. I think that was fantastic. And, you know, I guess firstly, for everyone listening, where can we find you on all your socials?
Well, on Twitter, it's apparently Jack Butwisser with an X instead of an A, because I've been scammed, couldn't get the apparently Jack tag. On Twitch, apparently Jack _RL. On YouTube, just type in apparently Jack and my channel will come up. And yeah, I have my links all in my YouTube anyway, so you can find me all there.
Fantastic. And I just want to give you the spotlight in this last, I guess, minute or so. And, you know, we have a lot of players obviously listening, trying to, you know, push into the next level. And, you know, they can type into YouTube or whatever, how can I get better as a player? How can I do X, Y, and Z? And, you know, we know all those things. So do you have any, like, tips to give some of these players or any insights to give some of these players who, you know, really just trying to get to the next level and, you know, be a professional?
Yeah, so in Rocket League, I mean, like I've talked about a few times, playing ones, I do attest to that. If you play ones, you will naturally improve quick and you have a faster improvement rate. And like you said throughout the episode, it's consistency. You know, it's better to play 2 hours a day than every day for a week, and play 14 hours in total than play 2 times a week for 7 hours. And that's just human consistency. That's just what consistency does to you. It rewards you. And have fun with it is the biggest. It's the biggest tip, because people, or myself, I don't know, I can't say for everyone, but I think it is for everyone. I learn quicker when I have fun with something. It's like in school, if you hate your teacher, you won't learn from the lesson. True. You're not having fun with it. So you gotta have fun with it, and that's kind of the three biggest tips. If you're wanting the actual tip, is to play ones and to be consistent, and then also have fun with it is quite a big one.
Brilliant. I really appreciate that, Jack. And, you know, that kind of nice insight that really summarizes it for, I guess, a lot of players listening, even coaches, or, you know, we got a whole wide audience that really listens in. So I'm really sure that they can take some of those key points that we detailed throughout today's episode into suggestion, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a good episode.
One thing I just quickly forgot that Fever actually asked me to ask is, where did the apparently Jack come from?
Why apparently? Oh, okay. All right. So on Xbox, my name was, it was quite a cringy name. It was like Chase My Ace, because I was like,
Lord. Tennis, yeah.
Right? And then I moved to PS4. I needed a new name. I wanted a new name. My brother's called James. He's 22. And his name on Steam was apparently James. Right. Nabbed. Mine. It's mine now. He's no longer called that. Yeah, yoink. Mine now. Yeah, so I literally stole it from my brother. Just slapped my name on the end.
Perfect. All right, man. Well, I really appreciate you obviously spending, you know, quite a bit on MindClickers today, and you know, we talked about tons of topics. So I really appreciate all the time and effort put into today's episode, and I'm really excited for everyone to hear it, man.
Nah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
No worries. Take it easy and enjoy the rest of your day, man.
You too.